Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening, and welcome to The Man's Voice. We're here from all over the nation talking about things that we feel are important to men. But I got to tell the panel, I am really getting sick and tired of reading the paper and the news, because the only thing that's in there these days is race, politics that don't make any sense, and killings. And, you know, it's getting on my nerve that we're talking about these things, and yet we got a presidential candidate who's buffoonery is the one that main issue that the news media is carrying. I mean, we had another innocent shooting this morning. The 15-year-old daughter of an Olympic sprinter, Tyson Gay, who did a lot of work in the Olympics, in this past Olympics, and is only second to the Jamaican Usain Bolt in terms of sprinting. And this morning at about 4 o'clock this morning, his daughter got caught in a shooting between two cars and was killed. And yet we're not talking about what are we going to do about this gun control? I know we talk about it all the time, but I think it's time that we, as men across the nation, put our foot down and say, no, we have to stop this. But unfortunately, there are those that don't want this to happen. I mean, they don't want any kind of gun control. As a matter of fact, a lot of politics right now are being based on that one issue, because, you know, it's, according to a lot of them, Hillary wants to take away our guns. But we got to stop this. Yeah. And I don't know what it is to do. It's just getting frustrating to read the paper all the time. And that's all we got to talk about is this person, that person is being discriminated against because of race, or this person and that person is being killed sometime because of race, or some kind, because it's just foolish what people are doing with guns. And then there's the politics. I'm just, you know, wow. Help me with this, Ron. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it is crazy. I mean, it seems to me, at least, that this world is kind of turning upside down on us and kind of getting out of hands, and we're losing control, in my opinion. And you know,
but I don't think it's the world. I think it's the United States, and I think we're.
Well, that's
we're
what like I meant. That's what
okay,
I meant.
I think we're
in
that country
the
now
the
where
States.
Other countries will say, don't go there on vacation, you will die. Everybody's staying away from the United States, because we're garnering across the nation, across the world. We're a bunch of people who kill people. We're a bunch of people who have crazy people in our political field. And if you're not European, don't go there, because you're going to end up dead or in jail. I think we've...
Yeah, When I said we live in a world, you know, that's I meant, you know, us here in the United States. There's other countries too that have problems, but you know, I think ours are magnified, at least for us, because we live here and we see it in the news, and I'm sure that we have much more gun violence than a lot of countries. And I know we've talked about this in prior shows, but you know, pretty much just about anybody here in this country can buy a gun. And to me, that's absurd. You know, I'm not a proponent of taking away, you know, people's guns, you know, because I do believe in the Second Amendment. But I, you know, I think there needs to be stricter guidelines. And, you know, the people that are doing the shootings are probably not people that would qualify to have guns in the first place if we did our due diligence. And, you know, and there is also, you know, the added dimension, at least in this country, of racial tensions. And, you know, you can't ignore that. We all know it exists, and I don't think it's getting better. And we've talked about this, too. So it's all compounded. And when you've got racial tension, and when you've got an angry society, and when you've got politics that are crazy, and when you've got people that are, you know, on the brink, you know, to the limit with stress and anxiety and, you know, work, you know, our country, we work more and we give people less vacations than probably most other countries in the world. In France, you're required to take 4 weeks minimum, I think, vacation per year. So all of that is compounded. And when you put, you know, guns, when you add guns into the mix, you know, it's a deadly scenario. So, I don't know what can be done. I mean, for starters, I think, stricter gun control and what Don did in Fort Lauderdale a few weeks ago with, starting at least to talk about the issue of, you know, why is there so much racial tension, especially between police officers and the African-American community. I think that's a good place to start. I've never seen it this bad. I don't know how the rest of you feel.
What do you feel, Don? I've never seen it this bad either. I've never seen it this bad for this thing. This is to me like a bomb waiting to explode, and I don't know what the explosion is going. The outcome of the explosion. What do you think, Don?
I also agree with both of you, Ron. You nailed it. And what stood out the most is when you said we in the United States seem to be forerunners in the despicable episode of the gun violence. It's because we have the most powerful media in the world, and social media and the networks, they amplify it and blow it out of proportion. If you look at every news company in the United States, I'm willing to bet you 9 out of 10 lead off with their top story, gun violence or killing, to draw ratings. You know, and the thing is, it's become such a big issue with guns. It used to be when I was growing up, you get in a fight, get your teeth knocked out or get bloody, and you go home. You know, come back another day. In this younger generation, you know, they'd rather shoot you and deal with it later. I mean, it's crazy. I've never seen anything like that in my life. And we got to get a handle on this. I'm not a proponent of taking guns away from people. For those who want to have guns, go ahead and have your guns. But the thing is, when we released all of the mentally ill people in the United States and didn't fund the mentally ill institutions, we set ourselves up. There are a lot of people that have chemical dependence, mental illness, that are going and get guns and using them. And, I mean, we just got to get a handle on this. And I don't know where to start. All I know is we got to get some type of dialogue, some type of conversation on how we deal with it. I'm not a professor in this, but I tell you what, I'm working hard to try to get conclusion to the matter.
What about you, Frank? I know we've talked about this several times, but it is to an epidemic proportion right now. I think we've talked about it, but it keeps happening day after day after day. You're reading this paper. That's all the news we're getting now is who's dead, whose politics are happening, who's been discriminated against. So it's very negative right now. What do you feel? I know that you have some.
Well, as far as guns are concerned, we lose 30,000 people a year, every year, by gun. We're the killingest nation. That's a free world. That's democratic. That's modern. So we do it, and that's because we need our guns. So in case there's a revolution, we can protect ourselves from the government. So that's the justification that we have for having it and sacrificing the 30,000 people per year. I don't think that the racial situation is at its lowest ebb. I think it was, when I grew up, it was pretty pathetic. You know, we had situations there where people were being strung up and hung. We never got anybody, just like what's happened pretty much in the police business, we never got anybody convicted, even if they were cited on film or witnesses that were convicted for hanging a black or African-American person. And judges and juries just wouldn't do it. It just was only a recent innovation where we started getting convictions for that, for civil rights convictions. So we've been a people that are predetermined to have bias against other people. for reasons, for no reasons. And I think that the problem with the current situation is that we just don't care enough to make a change. We're not religious enough. We're not saintly enough. And we don't care about our brother's condition or situation as much. What we're concerned about is whether we have to pay taxes and how much taxes we have to have.
Hmm. What about you, Bruce? What do you think about this? Hello, Bruce?
I'm thinking.
Oh, let us know what you're doing.
All right, I'll let you know.
You know, it's crazy out here right now. I cannot in my mind have my sons go out in the evening and be not uncomfortable about them returning. I'm on edge about, and they're in their 20s and gonna hit 30, but I still have this issue of be good, you know. And it's not just telling your kids to be good anymore themselves, is stay out of trouble. You get in trouble, act, you know, how to act. We're having to take that dialogue to a longer speech to tell our kids, not only do you have to be good when you go out, but what was that? Okay, Bruce, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I want to touch on, I want to agree with 3 points that our three of our nice panelists have mentioned. And then I want to put on something that I think we're all missing, including me and you, David. Ron's right in the fact that I don't think we have to take we don't have to take the step of trying to take all the guns away from them, because the bad guys will have them anyway. I agree with Ron when he says proper better control, whatever that is. We need that because you're not. It's the guns are a tool to the problem. They're not the problem. I agree with Don in the fact that gun violence and the high ratings with the news is deplorable. The news media could be our biggest, strongest asset, right in partner with the churches, if it wanted to, instead of constantly worrying about ratings. And I agree with Frank in the fact that I don't think racism now is at its all-time worst, but it sure isn't good, for sure. My problem with all this is guns and violence and all that. That's not the disease. We've got a national attitude that needs some attention. It needs the conversation. It doesn't need to constantly be black and white or minority against majority or whatever divisive labels we use. Why can't it be person to person? Why can't we start a dialogue? Maybe it starts with us. I put together a little symbol as kind of a reminder to me that you could have something as simple as, you know, all the ribbons we use for breast cancer and so forth. Let's say we had a black and white ribbon with tipped with various other colors. So it's all inclusive. And my caption would be, stop starting it and start stopping it. We need to stop this, crap about what we always talk about that's divisive. And we need to talk to each other as people, not as a black person, not as a white person, but a person. And on the start stopping, if you see it, call it out, try to correct it, try and help it. And there could be multiple things. It could be all the things that Ron and Frank and Don touched on are all starting places to make this happen. And I'm getting rather sick and tired of the fact that all we do is talk about it. We don't do anything. We don't try to fix the disease. We just try to eliminate some of the tools of the disease. And that's not going to get it solved. If you eliminated all the guns tomorrow and all the weaponry in the world, that wouldn't fix the disease. It would not.
All right. Joe, are you here?
I am.
I
think it's a matter of public policy, you know, how guns are, you know, the laws for guns. And I think public policy on guns is directed by the three, I think there are three major gun companies in the U.S., Smith & Wesson, Remington, and somebody else. And they direct public policy. By that, for example, they have a gun. Say I wanted to buy a gun. I could have this gun that would only fire in my hand. Say I had a few kids in the house. I wanted a gun. I wanted to make sure my kids didn't shoot themselves. I would purchase a gun that only I could fire. The gun companies didn't like that, and they eliminated that. Or even a cop. A cop could have a gun that only a cop can fire. I mean, there was a story in the news where somebody grabbed a cop's gun and started firing. That cop doesn't have available to him or easily available to him a gun that only he could fire or a police officer could fire, because I think the gun companies direct public policy on how this country treats guns. And there's no opposition to Smith & Wesson. It's quite similar to the drug companies. They make the drugs and they set the price. They set public policy. Instead of the representatives of the people saying, this is what we need for public policy on guns, this is what we need for public policy on drugs. So I think it's like public policy is not in the control of the people.
I think you're right. But I have a caller on the line. Michael, do you want to comment?
Somebody, yes, I do. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'm anti-gun. I'm anti-Second Amendment, and I personally think the answer right now would be smart guns. There is a problem out there.
Well, sorry. Go ahead.
What's going on?
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead. Did I lose him? Well,
I think you did.
No, it shows he's still there, but maybe. Anyway. All right. I hope if you're the caller that was just calling in, if you could call back. I see you're still on the line on that line, but maybe we disconnected something. I'm not sure. But he had a good point he was breaking, and I hope he calls back in so we can.
Can you hear me? Are you guys there?
Oh, there you go. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. No, I was going to say there's a product out there called the Smart Gun, and I wasn't sure if you guys touched on the Smart Gun. And there's a law in New Jersey right now. The New Jersey legislature passed a law here that one smart gun is sold anywhere in the state, the nation, the state of New Jersey has to only start selling smart guns. And the NRA has stepped in to try to block any manufacturer from selling that smart gun because they don't want to activate that New Jersey law. So I think the NRA is really the problem here. I think the NRA kind of is a city that has a lot of blood on its hands, I would say.
What can you tell us what a smart gun is? What's the difference between a regular gun and a smart gun?
Yeah, a smart gun is a gun similar to the smartphone. It's a gun that can only be fired by its owner.
Oh.
It identifies the fingerprint, so if it's your gun, someone else can't break in your house, grab your gun, and shoot you with it. Only the owner of that gun can fire that gun. And it's a product that's already available, but it's not on the market yet because the NRA is stopping it from hitting the market because of that law in New Jersey that says if one gun is sold in the United States, the state of New Jersey can only sell smart guns.
Well, I think that's all the states should say. We can only sell smart guns right now. Anybody got comments on that? What do you think about that?
I do, David.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
This is for you, Jim. Are you still on the line?
Joe?
Yeah, he's there.
You still there, Jim?
Jim.
Yes.
Yeah, he's there.
Okay.
Joe.
All right, Jim, do you think, let's say, like you said, and I think your comment was well put, if we could get smart guns somehow infused into the public psyche as a good first step, and as you said, the NRA, and I think Ron touched on it, one of our panelists did as well, so we talked about it a little bit. The NRI is dead set against it. So do you think if there was somehow you could say, well, if that's one of the big concerns that the NRA does not want to even go there, wouldn't one of the solutions you think be let's figure out a way to sit down, I'm generalizing here, sit down with the right people and try and find out what would be acceptable to the NRA so we could make a step towards more intelligent guns? You think that would be a good step as well, or you think it's hopeless?
I don't know. I think the NRA takes a hard line, and I think they it's my way or the highway as far as the NRA goes, I believe. And I think the NRA is representing the gun companies, and the gun companies just want that money. You know, if you have a smart gun, that means less people can use the gun. There's less bullet sales.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's no resale of that gun because it's only good for you. And the gun companies don't want that. They want profit. And they are controlling public policy, like in New Jersey and other states, and making sure that smart guns don't go on sale or become popular.
So I assume the smart gun can read your fingerprint or something on the trigger. Is that how it works?
It's a technology that ensures that only one person can fire the gun.
Well,
I'm not sure how to explain the technology, but
I can
only
explain it a little bit.
If you buy it, it only fires for you.
Okay, caller, go ahead. Explain to us.
Yeah, well, what it does, the gun actually comes with a bracelet. It fits around your arm, and the bracelet and the gun have to be in the vicinity of each other in order to fire.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So yeah, you technically have to put the bracelet on your arm and then grab the gun in your hand.
Or wear the bracelet.
So how does that work? How does that work if somebody's breaking into your house and you don't have a bracelet on you?
Well, that is the catch-22 to it. You have to grab the bracelet, put it on, then grab the fire.
Or wear the bracelet all the time.
Oh, wear the bracelet all the time, either. Or keep the both of them in the same vicinity of each other. So it's like loading the clip. You grab the gun, you got to grab the clip. So.
You know, but I'm really concerned that we are bypassing what we started out with. Is we had a shooting, two cars of people shooting and kill a young 15-year-old girl this morning. Even if you have the bracelet on and the gun on and you're shooting each other, shooting at each other. Of course, there are laws and they go after the people, but somebody's dead. It's a 15-year-old girl who is a daughter of one of our Olympians who is now dead this morning. And I think, you know, so we sell smart guns. Is the smart gun going to be a way to stop all of this? It might curb it. What's going to happen to all the guns that are out there now? There's too many guns out in the market to me right now. What do you think, John?
Yeah, guns in the market than people.
I think smart guns are an aspect that would be part of the solution, a small part of the solution, but even that is not being allowed by the NRA. I mean, there are many problems with smart guns, but it would at least solve the man or woman who wants a gun in their home to protect themselves and doesn't want their child to get a hold of the gun. But the NRA and the gun companies will not even allow that small change in gun policy. That's not allowed. And it's not even, not outlawing other guns, but they're not allowing it. And that's, I think, the problem, that the NRA, that the gun companies are determining public policy. And even the smallest minute threat to their public, to their policy, such as a smart gun, will not be allowed.
So what if this was part of the solution? What if someone could buy a regular market weapon like they do now, and just like, remember, years ago we never had gun locks. Well, gun locks got involved, and a lot of people use gun locks. I think responsible owners do. So let's say we don't touch the gun, but we make it an option to those that are responsible to somehow turn their own weapon into a smart gun. Because we know the criminals don't worry about a smart gun anyway, but the responsible ones could make those guns in an aftermarket way a safer firearm. Why couldn't we try to look at it that way?
I just think
that idea hasn't worked. I would argue we've tried that idea, and that idea hasn't worked yet.
I just think we're in a period of time where somebody needs to come up with something pretty quick, and I do think it needs to come from the top. That way it gets down to across the nation because, you know, state by state, the way things are going state by state is not really working because there isn't a state that is safe with things that are going on right now. There isn't a state that politics aren't doing something, somebody's not dying, or there's, you know, some race comments. And I'm tired, you know, it's just in the news on a daily basis. Can you imagine what is going through our children's minds? As fathers with children in our homes, we need to, I think, start being more active in our children's life. And I can't say all of us need to be more because a lot of men are very active in their children's life, but we need to make sure we're doing the positive thing, talking about this. And now we have to teach our kids how to be safe. You know, I mean, this young lady was out at a fast food place 3 o'clock in the morning and it's dead now. You know, what could you have told her? You know? Wow. Anyway.
David?
Go ahead.
David, what? Then, okay, let's go back to that terrible incident. I agree with you. A young daughter gets killed because two cars are firing at each other. Crazy. So doesn't it beg the question? Don't we need to dig further into why did they feel that's the only solution they have in the first place? I'm with all of most of you, or all of you really, that we got to do something about guns. They are a major weapon that are hurting or killing people. But we're not asking the question, why are they doing that in the first place? Why don't we try to find that out? Now, it's not a quick solution, but if you're going to get to the heart of the problem, there usually aren't any quick solutions. We got to find out why they feel that is the only way they can solve their problem. It's wrong, but we don't have a clue why they felt that they had to do that and put that girl in harm's way as the only solution they had to whatever their problem was. We're not doing that.
I totally agree, and let me address that. I would lay some of the blame with the media, the movies they're watching, the music they're listening to, or the video games they're playing. I would lay some of the blame on that. I mean, a lot of those little 15-year-old kids play a game called Grand Theft Auto where they just go around shooting people all day in the video game, and then they get out in the real world and think that's okay.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. They're desensitized to things.
You know, there was a time when we had censors who censored this stuff, but politically the censors got nailed to the cross because they were censoring things, and now they're very polite about it. They let everything out now. I mean, there's no censoring, you know, going on. But I do think that's a piece that needs to come back. Maybe that's where we started in the federal law, you know, censoring it and moving things around, because that is right. I remember Grand Theft Auto, and all that is kids killing each other or killing, you know, their what do you call those little characters in there? Their whatever they're called. Anyway, that's all that is. A lot of the games, that's all there is to it. And then there is this, I am, you know, I'm a man. I'm 14 or 15, so I'm a man, so I can go out there and do this. That's crazy. So I think it's necessary for us as men across this nation to sit down with our sons and daughters and talk about this. So it starts within those that are listening in your homes. And if you have some more comments that you would like to make, this is The Man's Voice. You can talk to us by calling 646-668-8740. Want to change the conversation a little bit about, I want to talk about social media, because I was talking to Ron. I have this thing about, I get these things on Facebook, and I will send them out, and I'm trying to draw back from it because there's a lot of things coming in that are funny to me, that not necessarily funny to everybody, but I send them out. And I remember Ron said to me, everything you send me is African-American. And I thought about that. And then I looked at it, and I did some research and found out that in media, social media, it's all segregated to who you might want to see. So whatever Ron was sending me was not African-American. Whatever I sent him was African. So social media is discriminating. I think they're setting up the discrimination piece also, because if you think about what you get, you don't see what everybody else gets, but you only get things that are what Facebook says designed for you. So there are things that I read that no one else reads who are not African-American. And I don't like that. I think if you're going to send, I think it should be across the board. Everybody should see the same thing. I think social media is getting segregated and going to cause problems down the road. What do you think, Don?
Well, David, I think that social media has come to a point where we're able to set our own brand and determine our brands according to what platforms we use and say what we want to say. So these companies, they already know the type of things you like based upon the posting that you do and the things that you subscribe to on social media. So what they do is they earmark things that pertain to what you like. They say, take a profile, David Shorter. He's African American. He likes this. He likes this. Based upon his postings, he likes this. He likes this. And you have defined your brand. So that's how they get a detailed outlook as to how to stereotype, I'm going to use that word, a person in social media. You know, social media is just really come into real focus over the past 10, 15 years at the most. And it's still being redefined. It's still growing. And it's awesome. And it's going to get really, really exciting. I'm looking forward to the next 5 years. It's really going to be crazy because look at all the different platforms out there now. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, Pinterest. I could just go down the line. It's about maybe 25 to 100 of them out there now. So we brand ourselves according to what we do.
Yeah, but what makes you think that I only want to see what you think I want to see? I don't want to see what Bruce is looking at. And what do you think? Bruce doesn't want to see what I'm looking at. I mean, shouldn't we all be bought into the same ballpark? It looks like we're being segregated by different ballparks that you're calling brands.
Can I address that? I do agree with you in regards to the segregation, but what's the difference in if you're watching, let's say you're watching BET as opposed to MTV? BET is going to have commercials about Revlon and things that appear to the African American.
But the difference is I can change the channel. The difference is I can look at MTV, BET, and any other station, and, you know, the Hispanic stations by changing a channel. With social media,
well, you can get off of Facebook and go to Twitter. You can get off of Twitter and go to Black Planet. You have options there as well.
Yeah, but they're all branding me. They're all branding me as an African-American person who only wants to see African-American stuff.
Well, so does being
David.
The country music.
Yes.
David, part of that
yes.
is fueled by as I think Don said, they've got a stereotype on you and on me. And as a result, in order to get a stronger following, they assume that if they satisfy your stereotype, you will tend to look to them for the news or whatever else they're selling, keyword selling, to them. Because the media now has to generate revenue. They didn't start that way, as I've said earlier. News was done for free, if you dig back far enough. And I think the fact that now they're a business, they are vying for your viewing and therefore revenue from that. So that they think that your stereotype is going to get you closer to them. That's what they're going to do. I agree with you, David. I don't like it either. But that's what I think a lot of them do.
Where are you at on this, Frank?
Hey, David, even when we place advertising buys for a particular client, I can say I want male, I want African-American, I want white male, I want people with alternative lifestyles, I want people with income, $50,000 or $75,000 a year plus, I can define that demographic and they will send me to those people and those platforms and the people on those platforms and then charge me a rate I give them my credit card, and they will send out to those people that I just defined in my demographic and take it off my credit card. We do advertising buys like that every week.
Okay.
Okay, so David, I think that the blaming media is just what it is. It's a blame game, okay? The responsibility for what we do and how we do with guns and what websites we're getting is on ourselves. You know, we put the politicians in office. We parent the kids that are doing the shooting. Obviously, the games that were the video games and everything, that's a parent's responsibility to, because what happens is builds insensitivity to the kids. They're still out there shooting, thinking it's a game. They're obviously not serious about it because we've got these 30,000 people that die a year. We've got more guns than we have people in the United States that are out. And no one wants to do anything about it. Additionally, what happens is these websites that you're talking about, if you identify politically as being a conservative, then you're going to get conservative news, and that's what's going to feed you. And so what we have is this dichotomy in the United States whereby we have people that are conservative who believe one thing, and we have people that are moderate or liberal that might believe something else, and it's perpetuated by their only outlets of information are these similar places and people that have that people aggregate. You get a dark cover. If you don't talk to a conservative person, then you never understand where they're coming from. And if you don't talk to a liberal person, the same thing. So we already have these stereotypes built up. The walls are being built up. And our guns are necessary in case there's a war.
All right. Let's move on just a little bit, because one of the things we have never really talked about, and probably my fault, is a lot of sports. And this is the men's show, so we should talk about some sports. And I want to just ask the question, so how do you think, and I'm not sure because I've been busy all day, the 49er game, has it started yet?
They lost.
Pardon me?
They lost.
They lost?
Yeah, they lost to
okay.
The New York team, Buffalo.
Okay, so how did the quarterback do? Kaepernick.
Evidently not very well.
Yeah,
may not have been here. Oh, see, there we go. We blame it on Kaepernick.
Evidently not very well.
Well, he did well. I saw him throw a touchdown, and they haven't had one of those in a long time. So I didn't get a chance to watch the whole game, but he's the he's got a lot of attention. Because a lot of people, and I get tuned in to both sides, the liberal as well as the conservative side. And most of the conservative people hate him because of his kneeling action for the flag. And a moderate guy like me, I think he's doing the country service. But that's what it is, okay? So if you're all conservative, all you hear is how bad it is. And you can read all kinds of off-the-wall created that's not even real that's put out by people. You know, one is that he's not a great athlete. Well, you got to be a great athlete to be in the NFL, no matter whether you play or you don't play. One is last week they posted that he was going to be dropped from the team, a conservative blog. And I said, no, he's actually starting this week, you know. That type of thing. So that's what we have. We've got a lot of misinformation going on. I don't blame the media for that. I blame ourselves for that. And because what happens is we want to believe what we want to believe. All right. And we are not very educated as a country. That's one of our problems also. Even though our schools are available to us, we're not very educated.
All right. Did get some comments from the public this past week, and there was a classroom that I had a chance to observe, and they told what I did, and so a lot of the kids asked some questions, and some of the questions were really deep, and I want to ask the panel some of these. One of the kids asked me, what are dads for? His mom does everything, so if I had a dad, what would he do? Why don't you trying to handle that, Joe? What does a dad do?
A dad keeps mom happy. Keeps mom happy, keeps the family happy, gives mom a house, provides security, guidance, you know. And really, I think dads need to be, I think the lines between mom and dad needs to be blurred. And I think dads also give an option to a child. For me, I mean, mom was mad at me, I'd go to dad, and he'd say, hey, it's okay, and vice versa. It was a problem if they both were mad at me. But, you know, if you have two parents, it just makes the family function quite well.
All right.
David,
I can
answer that, David.
Say, what do dads do, Don?
Thank you very much for calling me, sir. Dads are the protector, the provider, and the spiritual leader of the family. The family structure.
Can I change this up a little bit? Say this is a fifth grade student, and he asked that question. The answer you just gave me is an adult answer. How would you tell a fifth grade student what a dad does? What is a dad for?
Okay, very good, very good. Little Jimmy, I'll tell you what dads are good for. If anybody mess with you, little Jimmy, you come home and you tell daddy, and daddy's going to help you and going to protect you. And also, I'm going to make sure no one mess with you because I'm the bottom line. If they mess with you, they mess with daddy too, understand? And then, little Jimmy, you won't ever have to worry until you get a little older because I'm going to feed you and I'm going to provide for you. I'm going to make sure you have food, clothes, and so forth so you don't go hungry and you grow up to be a strong man. And then, little Jimmy, I'm going to teach you about who you are and where you come from and where you should be going. And there's someone bigger than you and I, and I'm not him. In fact, little Jimmy, I answer to him too. And his name is God. And I want to teach you about him.
My answer to that question as little Jimmy is, but my mom does all that.
Well, your mom answers to me because I'm the leader of the family. I didn't say the boss. I said the leader. So your mom is under me. First is God, then me, little Jimmy, and then your mom, and then you, little Jimmy, in that order.
Okay, so you want me to live in a dictatorship?
Well, it's not a dictatorship. It's a hierarchy.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, sir? What is the question? Okay, caller, pardon me, go ahead.
Yeah, what do you tell little Jimmy if his father's incarcerated or if his father got shot by the cops while walking to the store? Like, what do you tell little Jimmy this?
Well, you tell little Jimmy, hey, your dad's incarcerated because, Jimmy, he made a bad choice in life. You know,
what if
we
he
have
make
choices.
A bad choice in life? What if he's incarcerated by no fault of his own?
Well, you explain to him that sometimes you can be a victim of circumstances, like you just said, through no fault of his own, and that's the consequences.
All right. Bruce, can you handle that? Tell me, is a father, what is a dad? What are dads for was the question the kid asked. What are dads for? My mom does everything. What do I need a dad for?
It's funny you bring this up. I've had my 5-year-old grandson ask me almost the same question a little while ago. And here's how I answered it. I said, there's dad and there's mom. You know both of us. We're a team. Dad can teach you. I can teach you. Or in this case, my son, his father, can teach you certain things that you might want to know about. You know, you like sports now, catching the ball and doing kind of the rough and tumble things, you know, things you like to do. But mom's also got an important role where she might be a little softer than I am in regards to teaching you the, you know, the power of a hug and how to be nice to your sister and things like that. I didn't make it too deep. I kept it on that level.
But I wanted him to know that your parents are a team, and that team brings different values and different essence to building that little boy's his attitude in life. And both of them are important. I am not a believer that one woman can do it all or one man can do it all. Sometimes that's the best you can get. I understand that. But that's not the ideal situation, and it never will be, in my opinion.
All right. Another question I had, and this is from a teacher. What do you do about what does a child do about being over-mothered? How does a father handle it when he sees a child being over-mothered? What do you think, Frank? We got silent all of a sudden. Everybody's quiet. is anybody there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, I'm here, David.
I'm here.
Quiet.
All
right. Joe, what do you do? This ought to be good. What do you tell a kid who's worried about being over-mothered?
Over-mothered? I would talk to the wife and say, hey, you know, I don't want you turning our boy into a girl here. I mean, you know, he's okay. He's got to learn. I would talk to the wife and reason with her if possible. I mean, I think that's the obvious choice. I mean, and then secondly, I would take that boy and have him spend time with me away from mom. You know, give him
there
a chance to be a boy.
There you go.
Right.
I would talk to the boy also and let him know that I think he's being coddled too much by his mom, and I would let the mom know that as well. This is Frank.
Right.
I'd have a straight up conversation, and we'd also have a plan of what we're trying to produce here. We'd have that conversation, and probably be a couple times.
And I think that that is very prevalent, David. It needs to be done more so, because 60% of the homes in America are led by a female absent the father. So we got that situation very prevalent.
And,
right.
And you know,
right.
The one thing I like to point out, too, is that the idea of being a father is that you are, as pointed out earlier, you're a leader. So that's to Johnny. I'm letting Johnny know that he follows my example.
Right.
That's one of the things he's supposed to do, is follow my example. So I then work on being the best example that I can be. And the reason why you want to do that, Johnny, is because, one, you want to get to heaven, okay, for those who believe in heaven. And two, you want to be a good citizen. You want to have success in life, and my job is to teach you how to accomplish those things and more.
Okay.
And you know something, David? I'm glad you brought that up, because you asked a question earlier, and it all revolves around what we're speaking about right now with gun control. You know, guns don't kill people. People kill people. With guns. So we got a heart problem. America has a heart problem. And when we are talking about what we're talking about right now, we're dealing with the heart of man. And we got to change the heart of man. I don't think you can legislate gun control. We got to deal with the heart. The heart of man will change the whole situation. And the things we are talking about right now are step one.
Right. All right. So there were a couple of other questions, and I was running through a lot of them. A lot of them were very deep. One lady asked the question, how do men want to be told? How do men want a woman to say to them, I love you? And the conversation I had with the lady is, you don't have to say it to me. I know you love me by the way you act. You can say it every once in a while, but words are superficial. The way you treat me, the way you act, the way you do things for me, that lets me know you love me. But the question is, how do men want to hear from their women, I love you? So what do you think, Joe? How do you want to be told I love you?
You can verbalize it, but I think it's a feeling you have, you know. I think when you're loved, it changes you. You know, you feel different. You act different. You feel the love. You sense it, you know. And if your spouse or partner wants to express it to you, I don't think there's any wrong way. Just make an effort. If you feel a need to make an effort or express it, go ahead. But I think that, it's a condition you're in.
Right. What about you? Go ahead. I think that was Frank. Go ahead. Somebody said
no, it's Bruce.
Oh, Bruce, go ahead.
No, I just wanted to add to what he just said, agreeing with it heartedly, and add, for me anyway, not only actions. I think actions are more powerful than words, but both are appreciated in my book. But action, unselfish actions, actions where you know that individual looking across at you at the dining room table is thinking about what they can do for you. Unselfish acts. I've always taught my kids, if you do one unselfish thing, no angle, no expectation of reward for somebody, you do that unselfishly, you'll get 10 back in return. So I think the if you've got someone eager or willing or wants to do those kinds of things for you, you know that person feels extremely strong about you and most likely loves you.
All right. This is the Men's Voice, and you're listening here as we talk about all these different issues. And if you want to get in the conversation, you too can join in at 646-668-8740. And here's a question I thought was interesting. A lady wants to know, does a man feel that jealousy is, is love or insecurity? She wants to know if men feel that when a woman is jealous, they're in love or they're feeling insecure. And it could be either way, but what do you think? What do you think, Don?
I think it's insecurity, David, because if you love something, let it fly. Because if it comes back, it's yours. If I love something, I'm not going to be jealous of it. What's me is for me, and what God has for me is for me. In fact, I'm going to be very truthful with you. I don't want nothing nobody else doesn't want. So when I see someone say, my wife is attractive or beautiful, I get proud. I like that. I don't get insecure. I don't get jealous. I just take it as a compliment, really. I don't think it's jealousy.
What about you, Joe? What do you think?
I think it's both. I mean, if you love your woman or your man and maybe he or she is spending more time with somebody else, that would make you feel insecure. I mean, if you don't care about somebody, yeah, go ahead. Who cares? But if you love them and maybe you feel threatened, is your relationship, has it changed and you don't know nothing about it? Do you need to talk to him? I think it's a combination of both, insecurity and love. I think if you don't love the person or like the person at least, why would you care what they're doing or who they're doing it with?
Right. Another question was when I thought I would like to hear from the panel, and a lady wants to know, do men really have midlife crisis, and what is it, and how does she know it when her husband, you know, shows it? She was young, and she heard that he's going through a midlife crisis, but she didn't know the difference with her father, she said. So she wants to know, is that a real thing? And if it is, how do you know that that's what a man is going through? What do you think, Frank? Have you gone through a midlife crisis? Well, he's thinking.
Yeah, no. No, what you do is, I think, David, what you do is you learn from other people. You know, there's enough TV shows and enough people that trade in their spouses at a given time in life. And you see some bad results in that. Sometimes the spouse gives up, the new spouse gives up on them when they get bad health or run out of money, okay? So that's my perspective. My perspective on it is that you're supposed to be loyal to the person you're with. You're supposed to put the other person first, not yourself, not your personal self. And by the time you go, you're supposed to get in that midlife crisis, I guess, is 40-some years old. You should have picked up some ethics along the way. For instance, one of the things that people started teaching me at 17, as an adult at 17, is that I'd be a great guy once I understood that it's not what I could do for myself, but what I could do for other people. So that's the higher idea. And I think if you keep that in mind, you won't be succumbed to the midlife crisis that a lot of men seem to have.
Okay. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, let me answer the question with a question. What do most of us on our panel, and you too, David, what do we think a man's midlife crisis is in the first place? I tend to think it's maybe getting closer to the reality that I'm more than halfway through my life. I'm starting to be maybe thinking about or concerned or whatever or worried about a little bit about mortality and so forth. What do you guys think it is?
Well, actually, I thought it was, to me, midlife crisis is when you start wanting bigger cars and better things.
Well, but what fuels that?
Age. I was under the impression it was an age thing, somewhere between your midlife, when you get about your 40s or 50s, somewhere in there, you start wanting bigger, better things. That's what I thought a midlife crisis was, but I don't really, I've never experienced that or know anybody that
or
has.
Or things that make you feel younger.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's when you start dyeing your hair and all those kinds of things that some people do.
Or putting it back where it doesn't grow anymore.
What about you, Don? Have you gone through a midlife crisis? What do you think it is?
Oh, man, I've gone through it already. You know, it's all the things that you guys talked about. Sometimes I question the performance in sex as well.
You shouldn't all do right. that.
Well, we're getting to the end of our show. We appreciate those of you that are listening in. And, of course, as we go through some of these comments we made tonight, we always would like input from you guys. I know a lot of people are now sending me messages and getting word to me about questions they want to ask. And if you feel shy about calling in, you can always send us some messages by going to this number. And also leave messages for me to pick up. And a lot of people are doing that. But here's a quick, we only got 60 seconds or 45 seconds. So my question is, and this lady, there are ladies that want to know what men want for Father's Day. So quickly, let's go through the bunch. Don, what do you want for Father's Day? What kind of things do you want?
David. Wow, man. I've been blessed.
It's taking longer than it takes.
An awful lot. It's taking too long to answer that. I've just been blessed. What can I say?
I've been blessed.
Frank, what do you want for Father's Day?
I want some alone time with my beautiful wife.
There you go. Joe, what do you want for Father's Day? What kind of things do you want for Father's Day?
I want dinner.
Dinner.
Huh?
What? Dinner with the what?
There you go. Bruce, what are you?
An affectionate surprise.
There we go. Well, once again, thank you for listening to another week of The Man's Voice panel.
David, what do you want for Father's Day?
Yeah, David, what do you want?
We're out of time. Anyway, thanks for joining us on today. We'll look for you again next week. We enjoy having you with us, but we would appreciate you calling, more people calling in and saying, you know, joining in the panel. Until next week, guys, great for joining me this week, and we'll see you again. Good luck and have
Take
a happy
care,
week.
Take care, guys. See you next week.
Take care.
Night.
Bye. Thank you.